So continuing our reflections on the Eightfold Path. Tonight the topic is wise mindfulness. And wise mindfulness is part of the group of three factors of the path that are sometimes said to are be grouped together in the mental cultivation aspect of our practice. Sometimes the Eightfold Path is defined in three sections. The ethics section of wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. The mental cultivation section of wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And then the wisdom section of wise understanding and wise intention. So these three factors of wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration, they really come together as a group to, as kind of a foundation of the tools of our practice, actually. It's hard to speak about one without touching on the others. And last night Gil talked about wise effort. So I'll talk in more depth about what mindfulness is, and in particular what wise mindfulness, or this factor, right mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, is, how it, practically speaking, what it means. When we speak about mindfulness in kind of general terms or everyday terms, what we're basically saying mindfulness is the being present or aware of what's going on for us in the present moment. A kind of a self-reflective capacity of our minds, which is a really ordinary quality. It's a natural quality of our minds, something that in a way kind of makes us human, one of that aspects of consciousness that some researchers look at as being one of the key features of being human, that capacity for us to know that we know, to be aware of what's happening for us in the present moment. So this capacity, this kind of self-reflexive capacity of mind, it's pretty ordinary, and it's actually so ordinary and so much a part of our lives that very few of us, without having had someone like the Buddha come along and say, hey, this is an interesting quality of mind, and very few of us would have actually taken much note of it as being something to pay attention to in and of itself. And yet the Buddha noticed that and said, hey, you know, this is an interesting quality of mind. And when it's used in a certain way, it's really powerful. It's really helpful for us in terms of this question or this exploration of finding happiness. This true kind of happiness, a deep sense of well-being, peace, not reliant on conditions in the world. And so this quality of mind, this self-reflexive quality of mind, is important, and it, in the path of practice, in the Eightfold Path, it's joined with wisdom. It's joined with the wisdom of wise view and the actions of wise intention. to have this powerful impact on our minds, this freeing capacity to of this quality of wise mindfulness. So it's not just simply about being aware, you know, being aware of what's happening in the present moment. That's kind of the baseline definition, but if we think about, you know, what a thief might be doing while robbing a house, you know, that thief is probably pretty aware of what's happening in the present moment. And yet that awareness is directed towards particular ends. It's directed towards stealing these things. And so it's not simply about being aware in the present moment. So very important that our mindfulness include this perspective of wisdom. In a simple way, we can reflect on what that perspective is as being a turning towards the inner landscape of experience in a non-judgmental, non-reactive, non-manipulative way. Mindfulness, this wise mindfulness, doesn't interfere with experience. It recognizes what's happening while it's happening. It's kind of a more simple recognition. The classical definition of wise mindfulness that the Buddha said, well, this is what wise mindfulness is basically defined in terms of a way that we establish awareness in the present moment based on a certain way of paying attention to our mind and body processes. And this is described, this way of paying attention to our mind and body processes is described in a teaching called The Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And that's the classic definition. Mindfulness, wise mindfulness, is the mindfulness established based on practicing the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And just as a very general summary of a description of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Buddha basically goes through a whole variety of what's happening and kind of lays out our experience in these four different terrains. It says, look at the body, you know, pay attention to the breath, notice the postures, notice the way the body is disposed in walking and standing and activities of daily life. Notice this kind of texture of the bodily experience. So paying attention to the body is one of the foundations. Paying attention to the quality of feeling of whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is another one of the foundations of mindfulness. Recognizing the quality of the mind, is the mind easeful or angry? Is the mind confused or wanting? Is there concentration or stability in the mind? So this quality of looking at what is the mind, how is the mind, essentially. This is the third foundation of mindfulness, looking at the mind itself. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness is a little harder to describe in just a few sentences, but it's kind of looking at our experience through the perspective of some of the teachings of the Buddha. So he suggests, you know, it's really helpful to look at your experience through the perspective of whether or not you're caught by these qualities of the hindrances, of whether the mind is has aversion or greed or dullness or restlessness or doubt, and noticing whether those are present or absent in the mind, recognizing processes of body and mind and how they interrelate is another aspect of one of the teachings of the Buddha. So just various different ways into exploring what's happening in the present moment, kind of different frameworks for looking at our experience, different perspectives of looking at our experiences, this fourth foundation of mindfulness. And what strikes me about these four foundations is that in many of the exercises, this teaching on the four foundations of mindfulness is really the meditation instructions that the Buddha offered. And one of the things that really strikes me about these meditation instructions is that we can look at pretty much any one of these instructions, like the instruction on paying attention to the feeling of experience. Is pleasant? Is feeling pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? That quality of whether something's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is happening in every single moment of experience. And so whatever's happening for us, we can look at our experience through that perspective. So if there's a thought arising in the mind and that thought is producing a state of confusion and frustration in the mind, the experience can be seen through this perspective of, oh, there's unpleasant experience arising. Or from another foundation of mindfulness, in that experience of that unpleasant or that thought arising, producing frustration and confusion in the mind, in the foundation of the body, looking at what's happening in the present moment, as that thought arises, the perspective of looking from the view of the body would say, what's the experience in the body in that moment? The emotion of frustration has an impact on the body. How is that felt? So whatever is happening, nothing is outside of what we can pay attention to. Everything is allowable. Everything is worthy of this practice of mindfulness. Nothing is excluded. And yet the Buddha suggests looking at it from various perspectives, certain perspectives. Not any old perspective. I mean, if that thought of frustration arises in the mind, one perspective on that, to be aware of that, would be to think about how or why I should fix this problem. Now, that perspective isn't supportive of what the Buddha suggested is a movement away from suffering. So the perspective of the four foundations of mindfulness offers us tools for looking at whatever's happening in our experience, not excluding anything. Difficult emotion can arise. Uncomfortable states of mind can arise. Confusion, anger, self-hatred can arise. And the tool of wise mindfulness can bring a perspective that allows it to be a part of the unfolding of our path, a deepening of the wisdom. So some of the instructions, for instance, in this text are very simple. You know, the foundation about the mind, it says something like, when the mind is affected by aversion, one knows the mind is affected by aversion. So again, it's highlighting that's arising in the mind. That's a state arising in the mind. Aversion is arising in the mind. Now, typically, you know, we would think, oh, aversion, bad. We're supposed to get rid of aversion, right? But this instruction says one knows aversion is arising in the mind. So this is the pointer to the non-judgmental, non-reactive, non-manipulative quality of mindfulness. And what the Buddha, the brilliance of what the Buddha discovered is that non-reactive, when experience is explored from that perspective of non-judgmental, non-reactive, non-manipulative awareness, there's a transformation that happens around that experience. A transformation that tends to move the mind to let go of those states that tend to tie us up in knots and take us to suffering, and tends to lead us towards the release, the peace, the ease, the freedom of this letting go of this deeper kind of happiness, not reliant on the conditions of the world. So everything is allowable in mindfulness practice. And the one of the key shifts around experience is the recognition that whatever's happening is simply a phenomenon that's happening right now. So thought, for example. A thought arises in the mind, and if we are mindful, aware of it, there's a key difference between knowing that thought as something simply happening in the present moment, and a kind of a believing that thought as something that needs to be, have something done about it. There's a way that, you know, like a thought of the past. I think Gil kind of referred to this at some point. You know, thought of the past. Like the whole of the past can be created in our minds. We have a memory arise. A memory arises in our mind. And if we're not aware of that as being something that's happening here and now, there's a way that we kind of believe or are born into that world of that memory, almost living in, returning to that experience in our minds. And so we lose touch of with what's happening here and now. We lose touch of the fact of recognizing, oh, this thought about the past, this is something that's happening here and now. So that's a key shift. Everything's allowable as long as it's recognized as being something happening now. So this kind of talking about mindfulness as being non-reactive, non-judgmental, non-manipulative, attention to the present moment, sometimes this sounds like it is in conflict with the teaching on wise effort that Gil talked about last night, the teaching where the exploration is around cultivating the wholesome, letting go of the unwholesome, stopping the unwholesome if it's arising, avoiding the arising of the unwholesome if it's not there. Sometimes this description of mindfulness, non-reactive, non-judgmental, non-manipulative, sounds like, well, wise effort is about doing something and wise mindfulness is about not doing. How do these two come together? So I'd like to explore that a little bit with you, that So mindfulness as a tool in our toolkit for waking up, it's a really powerful tool, this non-judgmental, non-reactive, non-manipulative awareness. Not always possible to use that tool. Sometimes our habits of mind, our the patterns, the habits, the strength of our emotion or reactive afflictive emotions is stronger than our ability to actually meet it with this non-reactive, non-judgmental mindfulness. And in that case, we use the tools, the teachings on wise effort to help us navigate that situation. When we can be simple, non-reactive for whatever's arising in the present moment, actually that practice embeds, it's like it embeds the four right effort in it automatically. So let's look at what happens to us if we bring attention to some difficult state like anger in our mind. If we can bring this, if it's possible, if the mindfulness is strong enough to be able to meet our anger without reactivity and just, anger's arising in the present moment. What happens in that situation is that the mindfulness is kind of disengaging the gears of the anger. It's disengaging the processes that are keeping it rolling. So, for instance, a thought arises in the mind about being angry with someone, and then the anger arises, and we recognize, anger, there's anger. And with that, the kind of thoughts fall away, and we're able to just meet this process of anger. And that very meeting of the anger with that non-judgmental awareness creates the conditions for the anger to begin to unwind. So in that very action of being mindful of anger, we are already doing the work essentially of letting go of an unskillful state that has arisen. That's one of the definitions of one of the four kinds of wise effort. If something unskillful arises, find a way to let go of it. And so this bringing non-judgmental mindful awareness to something like anger creates the conditions for, it's like a letting be, allows the letting go to happen. And so it's the mindfulness incorporates that aspect of wise effort. And it also, in meeting that experience of anger with mindfulness, the mind begins to recognize, one of the things it recognizes is something like, this is suffering. Anger is suffering. The teaching of the Buddha about anger is like picking up a hot coal to throw at somebody. You know, this was definitely the way my mind worked. When I first started being aware of my anger, I became clearly aware that I thought that my anger was making the person I was angry at miserable, but I had no idea it was making me miserable. Until I began recognizing, turning towards the experience with mindfulness, and I began seeing, this actually creates the conditions of miserableness here. And that seeing, the recognition of the suffering of that state, actually supports the conditions for us not to, it creates the learning, let's say the learning environment for us to recognize anger is suffering, and that as the mind begins to deeply understand that, it begins to recognize heading in that direction is not helpful. And so the attending to our anger with mindfulness also creates the conditions for anger to arise less frequently in the future. So it supports the non-arising of anger, the second kind of wise effort. It creates the conditions for anger to arise less frequently in the future, that very meeting of the anger. Because the mind understands the suffering of it, and there's something inherent in about our organism that wants to head towards well-being. Our organism really wants to be happy. And when through this practice of mindfulness, the mind and body begin to get the full information about what's going on in our minds, the mind naturally begins to let go of those states that make us suffer and begins to more naturally gravitate towards those states that make us bring well-being. In some ways, this capacity of mindfulness that this wise mindfulness the Buddha taught is very powerful in aligning our organism towards well-being, bringing mindfulness to difficult states of mind, uncomfortable states of mind, reactive states of mind, creates the conditions for them to appear less frequently in our lives. Bringing mindfulness to wholesome, beautiful states of mind creates the conditions for them to appear more frequently, because the mind understands with the recognition of states like joy, like happiness, the mind understands that way is more congruent with well-being. It's really fortunate that our organism is built this way, and the power of this mindfulness is to essentially give our organism the information it needs to make skillful decisions. Delusion is a very potent force in our minds, delusion that obscures, like for instance, that what I said a few minutes ago, that when I was not mindful of my own anger, my delusion had me convinced, yeah, this is making them really miserable, making that person really miserable, and having no clue that the miserableness was happening in this mind and body. That was a delusion. That was delusion. And this process of bringing mindfulness to the experience uncovered the truth of that miserableness here and now, and the mind began to learn how to let it go. The organism began to learn how to let go of that state. So very naturally, this kind of wise mindfulness supports a letting go of unwholesome states, and simultaneously supports this cultivation of the states that take us towards ease, peace, well-being. So kind of practically speaking, looking at our experience, Wise mindfulness includes wise view. As we said a few days ago, wise view, kind of the main, one of the main definitions of wise view is the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And so how do these come together? What does it mean to bring the Four Noble Truths and mindfulness together? There's a very succinct statement of this in the suttas. The Buddha says, a wise person with wise attention reflects thus. This is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. This is the end of suffering. And this is the path leading to the end of suffering. So when I first heard that statement, I was a little confused about its direct implications. I thought, well, does this mean we just think about the Four Noble Truths? And then reading it a little more closely, I recognized that the phrases say, this is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. Essentially pointing us into the present moment experience, and in a way, taking this framework of the Four Noble Truths and exploring our experience through that framework. Any moment of our experience, so this is another way we can explore wise mindfulness. Any moment of our experience, whatever's happening in our experience, we can see through this framework of the Four Noble Truths. Either what's happening is dissatisfactoriness, unease, stress, suffering, this aspect of dukkha. What's happening in the moment may have that quality of dukkha, like that my recognition in that moment. Oh, this anger, this is suffering here. Oh, I get it. Okay. That was kind of a recognition in that moment. Oh, this is suffering. That's one perspective that can be taken. But suffering isn't always happening. Sometimes non-suffering is happening. Sometimes the mind is letting go. That's looking at experience through the perspective of the third noble truth. This is the end of suffering. Sometimes what's happening is that we're cultivating mindfulness, we're cultivating patience, we're cultivating concentration, we're cultivating wise effort. We're recognizing that aspect of experience. That's the path. We're cultivating the path. Or we may be recognizing how our wanting, our craving, our aversion is at play in the whole complex of our experience. So whatever's happening in the present moment, we can see through this framework of the Four Noble Truths. I'd like to explore a little bit more what it might mean to look at experience from just a couple of these, in particular the framework of this is suffering and this is the cause of suffering. You know, one of the important and amazing things that we start to see in exploring experience, this pointing into the present moment, you know, this is suffering. This experience right now, this is suffering. You know, this is actually a multi-layered teaching that, yes, what's arising in the moment? There may be that experience of suffering arising in the moment. But one of the keys that I began to recognize is that suffering only happens in the present moment. That's the only place it happens. We may think we are suffering about the past. You know, a thought arises in our mind about something that happened years ago. That thought arises in the mind. And we experience the anger or the confusion or the self-righteousness that's related to that memory. And in the moment we're suffering, and somehow we seem to think, well, that's you know, like that whole complex of emotion and suffering is the suffering of the past. But actually, it's being created right now. It's happening right now. And this is, again, that shift in that exploration of mindfulness to recognize what's happening is happening now. So suffering, the only place suffering happens is now. And what's kind of even more amazing in our exploration of this is that the direct cause of that suffering is also happening now. So again, that example of kind of the thought arising in the mind about something that happened years ago. Now, there's conditions that happened years ago. You had that argument with that person or some situation. That experience happened in the past. So that was a condition, something that was in your history. And yet what's happening right now is you're kind of going along minding your own business, you know, doing your yogi job, washing your dishes, whatever, you know. And then something happens. Often some kind of cause and effect link. You know, we pick up a mug, and that mug is just like the mug that we were holding when we had that argument. And boom, the associative nature of the mind links those two things, and the memory arises. And then in that moment of that memory arising, there's the whole response in the body to that memory arising. So that suffering of the reactivity to that memory, it's arising not so much based on what happened, whatever, 10 years ago. It's arising based on that memory coming up now in the present moment. It's being recreated here and now because of reactivity here and now. Sometimes we think that when a thought like that arises, that there's this inherent tying together of the, you know, like that situation. We had that situation arise and we were angry at that time. And somehow we think that the memory inherently carries those feelings with it. But actually, the memory is one thing and the emotions are a separate thing. And the processes of the mind, you know, the memory arises, and then very quickly the mind responds again. And it's possible to begin to, with mindfulness, actually see that these are separate processes. The memory can arise, and it's actually, there's a little tiny gap. Sometimes we can see that gap, sometimes not. There's a little tiny gap after that memory arises before the reactivity is created. So that the cause, the immediate cause of the suffering in the present moment is the reactivity in the present moment. It's not the same anger or frustration or self-righteousness that was happening 10 years ago. It's happening now. And again, the power of mindfulness to recognize, oh, this is happening now. This is happening now. So we start to see these conditions. We start to see through this willingness to meet experience moment after moment. We start to see how these things are linked. The cause and effect nature of the processes in our mind. And that meeting of experience, that mindful meeting of experience. Begins to help the mind understand first of all, I mean, what the mind begins to understand in seeing that with mindfulness is that that reactivity is born as a process of the mind. It is the mind begins to recognize that it's creating its own struggle. And that's actually an amazing insight. Sometimes if we're not seeing so clearly, we can take that personally and we go, oh my gosh, you know, this mind is just, it's horrible. It just creates its own suffering. But it's actually good news. Because in seeing that, when the mind witnesses its own contribution to the process of suffering, the mind itself begins to understand how to let go. An example from my own practice around anger, you know, around my very first mindfulness project, my very first mindfulness exploration. What got me into the practice to start with was that anger was out of control. Anger to a particular person, anger at a particular person. It was out of control. And I would find myself in a rage, not able to even function, and find myself frozen at the computer. And then I'd wake up. Oh, right, I said I would be mindful of anger. And it was, you know, at first it was just like, oh, wow. And this was where I got that insight. Oh, miserable. This doesn't make him feel miserable. It makes this being feel miserable. So the mind began to get that hint. And something about that willingness, that interest in just meeting anger whenever it arose. You know, that was my practice for the first few months of my meditation practice. Anger arises, oh, let me be there, let me meet it. And so just watching it, just seeing it arise. It didn't actually take very long before the mind began to kind of smell anger coming. You know, and it began to wake up sooner. And so the experience was much easier to deal with at that point. It's like, oh, this is kind of more, okay, yep, okay, this I can kind of hang out with a little bit. I don't know quite what to do with it, but okay, well, I guess I go back to work. Okay, you know, just kind of meeting it, seeing it, and then going on with my day. So just exploring that process, the mind began to understand. I didn't consciously say, wake up sooner into anger so that you don't have to get so crazy about it. The mind began to understand how to do that. The practice itself brought that wisdom in. And this whole exploration was giving me a real lesson in the suffering of that state itself. A real lesson in that. The mind began to very deeply know anger, that's suffering. Very deeply understanding that first noble truth. This is suffering. This is suffering. And then one day, several months into this process, I was just kind of, you know, hanging out in my kitchen and doing stuff in my kitchen, and I was cutting an apple, and that I was apparently, looking back on it, apparently fairly mindful, although I wasn't trying to be mindful. But as I cut the apple, the mind saw a memory of being with this person that I was angry with. And the memory was connected with the apple because I was with the person at a fruit stand somewhere. So, you know, there was a kind of an associative memory, associative nature of the memory there. So there was that action of cutting the apple, the memory arose. And in that moment of the memory arising, what I experienced was, well, it felt kind of like a freight train of desire, intention, ooh, jump on that thought and think more thoughts to get angry. There was this kind of freight train of impulse towards anger. That was kind of amazing. It was kind of shocking. It's like, wow, you mean I want to be angry? The mind actually wants to be angry? But fortunately, because I had spent several months really deeply getting to know anger is suffering, the mind seeing that impulse, that urge to jump on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry, the mind saw that as, ooh, that is the cause of suffering. In that moment, the second noble truth, that impulse towards anger, this is the cause of suffering. So that was seeing experience from that perspective. Now, I didn't know it at the time. I mean, I didn't say to myself, oh, this is the second noble truth. What I saw was that freight train of urge to get angry and the mind going, oh, that way lies suffering. And it's just kind of like the way your body responds when you reach out to touch something hot on the stove and the body draws back kind of automatically. The mind knew that way lies suffering. And it said, not going to do that. It let it go on its own. So this is the power of that non-reactive, non-judgmental, non-interfering mindfulness. It begins to give the mind an education in what is wholesome, what is helpful, what leads us away from suffering, what leads us towards suffering. We get a real understanding of that. So one of the keys for the deepening of the insights, the understanding that happens around mindfulness. I mean, actually, I like telling that story. I mean, it was a very powerful moment in my practice. It was like 3 months into my meditation practice, that moment when the mind saw that thought and recognized, oh, that way lies suffering. And it dropped it, you know, and it was like, wow. You know, it dropped that urge. And I actually stood there because I figured, oh, you know, something in my mind said, well, that person, the thought of that person arose in my mind. Of course, anger comes with that, you know. And I just assumed that anger would follow. But I stood there in my kitchen waiting to get angry, and I didn't get angry. It didn't happen. And that moment, that was when I got hooked to the practice. That was a really potent moment of seeing just how powerful this practice is. And that happened to me like in the first 3 months of my practice in daily life. You know, this kind of recognition, this kind of continuity, this kind of attentiveness can reveal really deep holdings, clingings, and help the mind to understand how to let go of it in daily life. The power of this practice, the power of this mindfulness is really amazing. And what we're doing here gives an even deeper possibility of the cultivation of that power. And the power of that mindfulness comes with continuity. Comes with the mind being able to kind of be in the present moment for a sustained time. Like Gil was saying, it's not just about being here, it's about staying here. Not with struggle, not with striving, because that struggle and striving actually kind of adds a level of activity to the mind that may not allow us to see what's actually unfolding. So that moment in the kitchen you know, when I was cutting that apple. It was just a very natural, easeful mindfulness that I wasn't even trying to do in that moment. So there, I'd been practicing mindfulness enough through my day that I stumbled into a period of time where the mindfulness was a little more continuous and got to witness that wisdom in that moment. Here we have the opportunity to keep remembering in a light way, with a light touch, cultivating this stability of mindfulness. And that stability of mindfulness is what will allow the mind to understand which way lies well-being. With this type of mindfulness, I mean, one thing that we sometimes say is it really doesn't matter what we are mindful of. What matters is that we are cultivating this non-reactive, non-judgmental attention. The way in which we're paying attention, Gil talked about this morning, how we pay attention, what our relationship to experience is. When our relationship to our experience has this balance, equanimity, has this curiosity, kindness, calm, ease to it, it doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. One of my teachers says, as long as the mind is balanced, as long as there's wise attention in the mind, anything we pay attention to can lead to wisdom and understanding. As my experience with watching anger arise, how naturally that led to wisdom. So this power of joining mindfulness with a level of very gentle persistence, bringing that continuity, that's where the power of mindfulness begins to be revealed. And in a way, the definition of wise concentration, which is what the theme will be tomorrow night, is the stability of mindfulness. That the continuity of mindfulness is the concentration. And that's where the power begins to really unfold, the power of the orientation of wise view being implemented through wise effort and wise mindfulness leads to the realization, the understanding, and the natural freedom. The mind naturally understands which way lies well-being. So let's sit together for a couple of minutes.